Good morning and welcome to Jump in Tucson. I am your host, Dr. Ed Ackerley. It's been my privilege over the last three decades or so to be a teacher in the Eller College of Management. I also teach in SBS, Social and Behavior Sciences, teach some communication and leadership courses there. It's been, and right now, the assignment is pretty daunting. I teach about 1,000 students a year. We summertime and over the winter break, we have online classes that we teach. And so it's pretty exciting. So the U of A has lots of people doing lots of fun and exciting things. With me in studio is my co-host this morning is Sixto Molina. Good morning, Sixto.
Good morning, Dr. Ed.
And when we ran for mayor, Sixto was my campaign manager, and he and I collaborate on a million different things. We like to go down to the Arizona Sands Club and hang out and look over the U of A and tell them how to run the place, right? If I were the president, here's what I would do, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, part of the wonder of the U of A is to talk about all the great things that are happening all across the campus and the wonderful people that are doing great work. And one of those people is Wendy Moore. She is a professor. I call her the bug lady. She's the curator of the University of Arizona Insect Collection. And good morning, Wendy.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Tell us a little bit about, before we get into bugs, tell us about how Wendy got to the University of Arizona.
Oh, I got here because of my love of insects and mostly my love of the field of systematics, which is the field of science that describes species, identifies them, and figures out how they're related to one another. And I was working on marine isopods when I first started my graduate studies in Charleston, South Carolina. And when I decided to go for a PhD, I looked around to find out what's the best school I could go to and the best person I could work with. And I ended up here at the University of Arizona for my PhD.
Great.
Yeah.
And you're the curator of the insect collection with, what, some 50,000 insects are cataloged there?
Yeah. Oh, we've 2 million.
2 million, okay.
two million specimens. And, you know, they're probably between 35,000 and 40,000 species.
Species, yeah.
Yeah.
Right. I had the wrong terminology there. So collecting bugs, why collect bugs and why have them on file for researchers and so forth? Why do this?
Well, insects are some of our most diverse organisms on the planet. And especially in terrestrial regions, they are like have the highest diversity, yet they're really tiny, and a lot of them look a lot alike. Mm-hmm. And so by having this library of specimens that are identified by specialists, all organized and accessible to researchers, we have a library for identifying insects, and their names tie everything we know about that insect to the literature and everything that we know about that species. And so by giving it a scientific name, by being able to identify them, we can make a plan of action as to what we should do if we find either a friend or a foe, right? If we need pesticides or we need to embrace this diversity and let it be.
I thought it was interesting. We had Gene Hall a couple of episodes ago, and he was talking about the number of insects that are on the earth or have been on the earth. It's in 10 to the 18 zeros of insects. It's amazing how many bazillion, what a quintillion, I guess that is, of how many.
We've got about 1 million described species, but the estimates of the undescribed species go to even 100 million.
Right.
In reality, we just haven't documented them all.
And that's variations of species and so forth. But there could be actually some insects that are never been really cataloged before. People know what they are or even given them a name.
Absolutely. I mean, like there are more that we don't know than we do know.
And so, are there, you were talking about oceanography and being involved in, are there insects, do the insects have to be on land or can insects be in the water? Or they can be on the water? They can be on the water.
There's one, the Halobates, the water strider, can be on the water. And some insects are in the aquatic systems, systems.
Tide pools and marshes and things like that?
More like Madera Canyon, you know, like freshwater systems.
Right.
Salt water is really hard and very rare for insects to be in that.
Mm-hmm. But they're not actually, insects are by definition not in the water per se, right?
Not in the salt water.
Right. But they can be in fresh water.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a whole class at the U of A on aquatic entomology. So dragonflies and mayflies, their larvae are fully aquatic. Oh, well, lots of water beetles.
They're in the water when they're born, basically, and gestate into an animal by doing it. I guess insects are not called animals. Here I am getting
they're animals. They're definitely animals. Okay. No, it's perfect.
I'm getting a lesson in entomology. How many of these bug collection or insect collection places are there in the world? Is University one of the biggest?
It's not really one of the biggest in the world, because there are huge insect collections like at the Smithsonian, at any of the big natural history museums around the world. So those are really enormous, but ours is really big for a university collection, and it's focused on our Sonoran Desert region in the Madrean Sky Islands, which is a biodiversity hotspot. So we have a very special insect fauna that we curate.
Right.
And that's our mission.
And lots of research as a Division I Research I institution. It's really important that research has the tools they need and the subject matter to look at in order to do the research.
That's exactly right.
So when someone says they want to investigate a certain species and you have a sample of it, they can come to you and you guys can pull that out and they can look and see and look at the data and do some research on things. So
that's it.
Whether it be mosquitoes or whether it be termites or whatever human beings want to think about.
Yep.
You have the opportunity for them. Well, that's really cool. Well, when we come back after the break, we'll talk with Wendy Moore. She is the curator of the University of Arizona Insect Collection, but she's also one of the leaders of the Tucson Bee Collaborative. And we're going to talk a little bit about how important bees are to human beings, but also to life in general. And we'll talk about how that whole group got together and why bees are so important to the world. They are important, right? Bees are important.
They're really important.
They just don't provide us honey. They do a lot of different things.
The solitary bees, right. Yeah, honeybees provide honey.
Yeah. So when you call your best friend honey or whatever, that's a good thing. So when we come back, we'll talk about the Tucson Bee Collaborative, and we'll talk a little bit about what the buzz is that we're hearing. That was a good little...
Sounds good.
That was my little joke, my little dad joke for the day. So, okay, you're listening to Jump in Tucson on KVOI 1030 AM, and we're talking today with Wendy Moore, curator of the University of Arizona Insect Collection and leader of the Tucson Bee Collaborative. We'll be back after the break. You're listening to KVOI 1030 AM, The Wonder Show, the good things going on at the University of Arizona on Jump in Tucson. Welcome back to Jump in Tucson. This is the Monday Wonder Edition of the good things going on at the University of Arizona in research, education, what faculty is doing, what staff is doing. With me is my co-host this morning, Sixto Molina. Good morning again, Sixto.
Good morning.
And with us is Wendy Moore. She is a full professor. Congratulations on just recently being promoted to full professor of insect systematics, the curator of the University of Arizona Insect Collection. But she's also has a little passion for bees, and so she's one of the people that helped get the Tucson Bee Collaborative to where it is. And tell us a little bit about the Tucson Bee Collaborative and why that organization is about and what is the buzz about it.
Sure. Okay. So the Tucson Bee Collaborative, it's a partnership effort between the University of Arizona's Insect Collection, Pima Community College, and the Arizona Sonora Desert Museum. So we've teamed up to run a series, a network of course-based undergraduate research experiences or cures that involve students in research. And what we're doing is building now molecular resources to identify species of bees, because bees are really difficult to identify even for bee specialists. And so by using these little snippets of DNA from one part of the genome, we're able to use that as a proxy for species identification. And we can then therefore identify any specimen of bee to species without needing to have that expertise of a database in your brain of morphological characters that make a species. And so by involving students in the process, they get hands-on training for research, and they end up published scientists at the end of their semester because we publish those sequences on an international database.
And are these bees, obviously the bees that they're looking at, are they intrinsic to this area, or are they looking at bees from all around the world?
Just intrinsic to this area. We live in a biodiversity hotspot for solitary bees, and so there's no need for us to look further afield. We've got our work cut out for us.
And so the
scientists at the Arizona Sonora Desert Museum have been studying bee diversity across the Tucson Basin, and they've got a ton of specimens that they need identified to the species level. So these students, the community college students and the U of A students and even some high school students, are all working together to help identify those specimens that the ASDM bee team has collected so that they can do their research.
That's pretty funny that to have an organization where you want to be identified as the bee team. You're not the A team, you're the bee team.
Well, because of my police background, I've been particularly interested in killer bees. We've heard so much about killer bees. Could you tell us a little bit about what they look like? Do they carry guns? Or
killer bees are Africanized honeybees. So honeybees are not native bees. They're domesticated. They're from Europe originally and Africa. We first had honeybees come from Europe with humans. You know, so They're not the ones that co-evolved with the plants here, pollinating all of the angiosperms, but they're instead they're new residents, and then several years ago, a colony was brought over to Brazil from Africa. Those are Africanized. They're the African lineage of honeybees, and they are really aggressive, and they spread really quickly all the way up throughout North America. And so they're honeybees. They're producing honey, and they're competing with the European honeybees, and they're very aggressive. They just, you know, they have an amazing resource. They have all this brood, all of this honey, and they need to protect it. And they have great ways of communicating with one another if there's danger in an area so that they can recruit their sisters to come and protect their resource.
So just to be clear, they don't kill anybody, though, do they?
Well, they can, in fact.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, I've heard of people, if you fall and you can't get up and you're near an Africanized killer bee nest, you can be stung too much.
Wow.
So,
and some people are allergic, obviously.
And some people are allergic.
And if you get stung multiple times and you're allergic, then that could cause anaphylactic stress or whatever, and you would have a problem breathing, and that you might die from the effects of the honeybees. But we shouldn't necessarily be afraid of them, because not all bees are Africanized and are so aggressive, and the little honeybee that's coming and getting on your cactus flower or something is probably a good guy.
It's probably not a honeybee.
Right.
It's probably a native bee. So there's a really big difference. These solitary native bees are single mothers that dig their own nests. They provision their larvae with pollen. They lay one egg and they seal it off. And so those solitary bees, they're unlike it being in a hive with tons of other bees. Those little larvae are underground or in a tree branch, or you know, in a little protected nest, and they are not aggressive whatsoever.
Right.
They don't have anything to protect like the big honeybees do. So bees, this is like, we have 700, at least 700 species of bees in southern Arizona. That's one of the questions we want to answer, is how many we actually have in there. Many of them are specialists on certain plants. Some of them are really important for pollinating food, like squash bees and almonds and blueberries. And so they're out there just doing their own thing, keeping all of this ecosystem running, you know? And so definitely we shouldn't be afraid of them.
Right. We're talking with Wendy Moore. She is a full professor of insect systematics in the University of Arizona. She's the curator of the University of Arizona Insect Collection and one of the key participants in the Tucson Bee Collaborative. You know, when people, I'm just speaking from my own experience, when people see a bee, they kind of react, oh my gosh, I'm going to get stung. This is going to be a problem for me. That's not really true, is it? These solitary bees, they're just kind of doing their own thing, trying to stay away from people and pollinate and bring back some stuff for their little larvae, right?
They are. And the other part of it is that honeybees, there are lots of them.
Right.
Right. And so a lot of the bees that you see are honeybees, and they can sting you.
Mm-hmm.
And so, but unless you're really threatening, if you step on them, that's a problem, or you're threatening their nest that they're going to defend, that's a problem. But other than that, they're not going to come after you.
Right. They're just going to do their own thing.
And, exactly.
And be themselves, right?
Just be. <Yeah. laughs>
About 3 weeks ago, there was a Diamondbacks game on. And the game was delayed because bees had come into the stadium, and they had to call the bee guy and wait for him to get there. Mm-hmm. And in the end, the bee guy took the bees away, and they made him the hero. They had him throw out the first baseball at the game. I thought that was pretty cool.
It wasn't a baseball. It was a bee ball.
It was a bee ball.
There you go. Yeah. Well, that's great. Can people, obviously the Tucson Bee Collaborative, go to TucsonBeeCollaborative.org and you can see some beautiful pictures of some solitary bees and so forth. But, both at the University of Arizona where you have the insect collection and so forth, where can listeners go to learn more about bees and the collaborative and just, to become more familiar with our friends in the desert?
Yeah, we have Tucson Bee Collaborative. We have events, or we participate in bigger events. In October, on October 6th, which is a Sunday, we're going to have the 12th annual Arizona Insect Festival at the University of Arizona. And that's in the ENR2 building right next to the 6th Street Garage. And we'll be there, but it's a very big, big event. So all of the professors in the Department of Entomology will adopt a booth and describe and translate their research to the public. And we have entomologists of all ages, from very small kids to grandparents who just get out there and enjoy and celebrate the diversity of insects. And it's always free. And we try to advertise it really broadly. Tucson Bee Collaborative will be there. And we'll show like the process of our DNA barcoding and some of the results of some of the students' research.
And that's in October, so we yep. can maybe have someone back from that to
that would be great.
Come talk about and invite some people to that. And if people want to know more about the University of Arizona Insect Collection, they would just go to the website there to find out more about that?
Sure, yeah.
And from time to time, there are some events that happen through that, too, that people can
oh,
see.
All the time.
Like Festival of Books, they can go see some displays and so forth.
Yeah. Exactly. And the insect collection will also have a big exhibit at the Arizona Insect Festival. But the Festival of Books, and we do give tours from time to time. We've lessened that because of COVID.
Well, I know two guys that will bug you. Sixto and I will come down and bug you for a tour, because that would be interesting to see that. I think that would be fascinating to see all the insects that you have, and to learn a little bit more about bees and how important they are to life in the desert here and this ecosystem that we have and that we call home. And so, if you see a bee, if you're not doing anything to upset it, just let it be.
Let it be and celebrate it.
That's the old song from the Beatles. Let it be. So, well, thank you so much, Wendy Moore, full professor of insect systematics at the University of Arizona. We appreciate what you do for students and what you do for research and what you do for the community and looking after the bees that are so important too. So thanks for being with us.
Thank you so much.
Great.
It's fun.
Well, you've been listening to Jump in Tucson with a Wonder version on Monday. When we come back after the break, we're going to talk with some other guests. This is a great example of the good work going on at the University of Arizona that here on Jump in Tucson, we tell the people about. It's a great experience to learn more about what the great research and education opportunities happening at the University of Arizona. We'll be back after the break. You're listening to Jump in Tucson on KVOI 1030 AM, The Voice, Tucson's only live local news and talk station. Welcome back to Jump in Tucson. I'm your host, Dr. Ed Ackerley. With me is my co-host on this Monday morning. This is Sixto Molina. Good morning, Sixto.
Good morning, Dr. Ed.
Hey, I played football when I was a young guy. You were around football a lot, too, and we go to the football games together, sit there, and we boo the refs, don't we? We scream about the referees and say what horrible calls those were, right?
Actually, a good
football game with referees is when you leave and you don't even know the referees were there. That's a really good game. That's when you know you've been to a good game. Why am I talking about football, U of A, and referees? Well, a few months ago, we had Colin Waite on the show. He is the director of Camp Cooper, which is an important developmental program for students at the U of A and younger students to go to Camp Cooper and learn about the desert and some things, some wonderful things that he does with those young people. But Colin's also involved with the Arizona Football Officials Association. And that's one of the good things about Wonder here, the Jump in Tucson program and the Wonder session, is to talk about how the University of Arizona is so connected in so many different ways throughout the community. And I say it's the elephant in the room. Without the University of Arizona in the middle of downtown Tucson, we would have an Air Force base and a couple of Walmarts and some sorrel cactus. It's amazing how important the University of Arizona is to the vibrancy of our community. So with us in studio today are two people who are friends of Colin's, Richard McGee and Joshua Waits. You probably go by Rick and Josh, probably, huh?
That is correct, yes.
Yeah, so welcome, guys. So,
thank you.
So let's start first with you, Rick. Tell us a little bit about yourself and what you do for a living, and then how you got involved in refereeing.
I've actually been in media for about 15, 16 years now. So radio, TV, digital media, all kinds of things.
iHeart.
Yeah. Yes. Started out with Yellow Pages, but...
That doesn't make you bad. You work for Dex, right? Yeah.
No, Yellow Pages, Yellow Book.
Oh, the Yellow Book. The Yellow Book, yeah.
Yeah. The low budget Yellow Pages.
So how did you get involved in doing refereeing for football and other sports?
That's an interesting story. I was a band parent for 7 years. So,
which is also really important.
You know? I would sit in the stands watching the games, watching my kids, and I just started talking to some of the referees occasionally and got to know one of them. He said, well, what are you doing after your last kid graduates? Because I told him, I said, well, this is my last night as a band parent. He goes, well, what are you going to do with your free time now? And I was like, I don't know. And he goes, why don't you become a ref? Yeah. And so I was like, okay, where do I go sign up? And he said, AIAonline.org. And I went in, signed up, and they got in touch with me and started me training. And it's been 15, 16 years now.
It's been fun, hasn't it?
It is a blast. I love it.
You know where you're going to be every Thursday and Friday nights in the fall, though, right?
I do.
You're going to be at some high school or some college game. And so, Josh, tell us a little bit about you, what you do for a living, and how you got into refereeing.
Yeah, my exciting day is insurance. So,
Yeah,
commercial lines broker. So that's just a lot of keyboard strokes and typing and talking to clients on the phone. So exciting.
Your own
stuff.
Company, or do you work for?
No, I work for it's the one of the top five brokers in the total nation, actually.
Wow.
So
wow.
Yeah. So some days are busier than others. So
that's great. That's great. And how'd you get into refereeing?
Refereeing, I actually had my own agency at the time. This would have been 2006, and a friend of mine, Jason Hinsky. And those who listen to who know Jason, he's right. In Florida now. He just called me up on the phone. He's like, hey, I'm going to a meeting at Rincon. I'm going to start football officiating. And I said, I'm in. I'll meet you at the meeting. Kind of like Rick. Some people you have to twist their arms to get them to go. I was like, I'll try it out. And then when I got to the meeting, I'm looking around. There's about 130 people in that. And I'm like, what did I get myself into? But the rest, as they say, is history.
That's great. That's great. So you both were affiliated with the statewide group called the Arizona Football Officials Association. Tell us a little bit about that organization and what it does and who's all involved in that.
Yeah, so I'm on the, I'm crazy enough, I'm on the our chapter board down here and then also the state board for the AZFOA. And anyone who wants to look at any recruiting or materials we have is at azfoa.org. And it's pretty much to streamline everything in the state so everyone's on the same page. Training materials, anything you need to know about officiating, it's on that website. And then basically when, as you were saying, the best game you know is when you never saw the officials. That's our goal, is that we were never there. And then also the thing that we strive in officiating is consistency in the call. So we're trying to get everybody on the same page. And then we have the resources, and now it's just a matter of getting the bodies and everybody involved to really knock it out of the park and create a great environment for the student athletes, coaches, fans, et cetera.
Yeah. So Rick, you sell radio time during the week and internet and all the stuff that iHeart has, but how has this kind of experience of being a referee kind of enhanced your perspective on things? You know, after being sitting in the stands and watching the referees, now you're out there running around and actually calling the game. How does your perspective change, even when you watch an NFL game or even when you watch a college game?
Well, now when I'm watching an NFL game and there are people around me, they'll ask me about calls.
Right.
That's, you know, they're like, hey, was that right? I kind of leave that alone.
Yeah.
But I was the guy that was always screaming at the refs in the stands. I was like, oh my God, that was a terrible call. Well, right. When you get on the field, you realize that nobody's perfect, right? Nobody is perfect, but you do the best you can. And we have tons of training. It's really helped me grow as a person.
Right.
Also keeps me in shape. You know?
You have to stay in shape to run up and down the field all day, all night long on those days. And is this you just kind of, one of your friends said, let's go do this, and how has it changed your perspective of watching games and watching pro games and college games and so forth, and watching other referees referee?
It's ruined my experience as a fan, because I no longer watch the game and I watch the officials and what they're doing. And then also when there's a call that's either made or not made, then I can kind of put myself in their shoes and say, well, they were out of position. So it's changed my perspective, and I would have called myself a super fan, you know, before, just going nuts. And then now as I watch a game, you wouldn't even know there's a game on.
Right.
And all my friends are going nuts. And, you know, I already told them, don't ask me any questions at the NFL level, any pro level. I don't know those rules. Mm-hmm. I know the rules of the games that I officiate. Mm-hmm. It's ruined my experience. Once you start officiating, then you realize that, because you're watching the officials more than you're actually watching the players on the field.
That's funny that you say that, Rick. When I was a young guy at your station, I was able to go watch the U of A basketball team, and I was what I did. This tells you how long ago this was. I would sit on the front row, the row around the court at McHale, and I would watch the game, listen to the referees, and then afterwards I'd go in and I'd put a microphone and push a Radio Shack recorder, and Lute Olson would talk about the game, and one of the kids or something would talk about the game. Then I'd drive the cassette tape out to the station where they used to be and drop it off, and they would use it in the morning. Jack Beatty and Alan Michaels and those guys would use it in the morning to do their morning show, because, you know, they had to get up at 4 o'clock, so they couldn't go to the games. So I was just kind of like this messenger. And like you just said, what a perspective change. When I go to pro games now or U of A games, I just sit there and watch it. I don't scream like a crazy person, because I had that ability to sit there, and it changes your perspective on what you do. I don't yell much at the football games, do I, Sixto?
No, we just
except for at the referees. I do yell at the referees. We just sit there and watch good plays and good games and so forth. We're going to go to break here in a second, but, in the pro game and in the college game, they use the instant replay and so forth. You don't have that luxury at the high school level and the junior college level, do you?
We have a very antiquated version of that, which is all five of us get together if it's a five-person crew on a Friday night.
Right.
Rich, you're the primary official. What did you see?
Right.
Well, I need help. I got blocked out. Okay, now you bring everybody in. Now you're putting together an actual puzzle.
Right.
You know, and you don't have video to tell you. So most of the time we just stick with whatever, you know, like they would in a replay situation.
It's the best call that you can make, and under the circumstances, that's the call. And that's a good lesson for kids to learn too, that sometimes the call is made. You can be driving down the street and there's 15 cars going, and one police officer pulls up behind you and gives you a ticket, and everybody else was going the same speed that you were, and how come I get the ticket and you don't? The same thing is true in the sports. You know, you get a call and maybe you disagree with it, but that's a good learning lesson for people.
Yeah, my grandfather had a joke about that, and he's like, oh, it's the one he pulls over. He says, sir, have you ever been fishing? And the guy who got the ticket, he's like, no. Well, did you ever catch them all?
Ah, I love it. So we're talking with Rick McGee and Josh Waits from the Arizona Football Officials Association, another way that the University of Arizona has connections into the community. When we come back after the break, we'll talk a little bit more about how you might be able to get involved, or if you know somebody that would like to join the ranks of high school and college referees for football. We'll give you the information to do that. You're listening to Jump in Tucson on KVOI 1030 AM, The Voice, Tucson's only live local news and talk station. We'll be back after the break. Welcome back to Jump in Tucson on KVOI 1030 AM, The Voice. This is the Wonder segment, where we talk about the interesting and unique things that the University of Arizona has to offer the community. And the connection here this morning is Colin Waits, who's with the Camp Cooper, who directs Camp Cooper with young people, also has a mood lighting job as a referee for football. And so with me is the great football player Sixto Molina. They called you Flash. Oh, that was on baseball.
That was Flash, yeah.
Yeah, the fastest guy on the team, right?
Yeah, right.
Yeah. people ask me what I played in football. I played left out is what I played, and it was great. So we have Rick McGee and Josh Waits with us from the Arizona Football Association, Officials Association. So these guys are professionals. They have jobs during the week, they have careers, and they have families, and they have lots of things. But on certain nights of the week and certain days, Saturdays specifically, they're out running around chasing young people on the football field. So it's kind of a unique experience to be a referee, right, Josh?
Absolutely. And it's not so much chasing them. Once you know your beat, then you just let them go.
Right.
So when you first start, you wanted to keep up with them, and then your body eventually tells you, it's like, no, you're not playing anymore. So your job's watching and being the best credible position you can get into.
That's great. So let's talk a little bit. One of the purposes of this is the engagement and getting people involved and to jump in to this. So if somebody has just a remote interest in doing something that'll help young people and, as Rick said, keep them physically fit, how could a person of what age and what would the requirements be for them to contact you and say, hey, I want to be a football referee. What do I got to do?
At the high school level, there is an age requirement. It's 18 years old. And the Arizona Interscholastic Association, AIA, is our state association. That's our governing board. That anything that comes to high school, that's where that runs through. And that's AIAonline.org. Preferably, if you're looking to get into officiating, is to go to our state association website, which is AZFOA.org. And then all the connections can be made. And then if you register there and still need help and you're down in Tucson, then they'll get you in touch with a guy like myself or Rich or some of our other members to get you where you need to be.
So you talked about how you were sitting in the stands and were a band parent, and then you got engaged in the process. How does, in this recruiting process, what tips the scale to say, okay, I'm gonna stop just sitting in the stands. I'm gonna go and check it out and see what motivated you and how I mean, there's probably people listening who say, yeah, I've thought about that before, but I just don't know how to do it or I haven't pushed that button yet. How do you push the button?
Well, you know, my love of sports was the first thing. I mean, I've been a sports junkie since I was a child. I played football, basketball, baseball in high school, mm-hmm. So it was a natural progression that one day I ended up reffing them all. So.
Mm-hmm. So if there was a person that is kind of like you and kind of, it's interesting, how would you encourage them to say, give it a try? And what would be the motivation to give it a shot?
Well, there is financial motivation, I can mm-hmm. tell you that. I mean, you can make some pretty good money officiating on the side. And it's just side money. I mean, when I did my taxes this year, I was amazed mm-hmm. at how much money I'd made officiating. So there's that. And really, you're helping the community out. Because right. without us, high school football doesn't happen.
Right.
And so we need officials. We need high school officials to go out there so these kids can play football.
Right.
So,
and I'm all in on the fact that, you know, we need the arts and we need lots of interscholastic stuff going on all over the place, but sports is really important to the development of young people, whether it be soccer or basketball or baseball, but football, the all-American football sport, I'm a real lover of that. And Sixto and I go to the U of A football games, and we are stalwart fans, are we not?
Yes, we are. And before that, I was a football dad for 12 years.
Right.
I had three sons that played football at the high school level.
Awesome.
And college level. And, you know, you guys are amazing. I want to salute you guys because you do a good job.
Thank you.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much.
I have the good fortune of having a couple of sons that played football as well, and one went on to the college level and formative in his life. I he's getting married in a couple of months, and he's a general. He's just 30 years old, and he's 32 years old now, I guess. And he's a general sales manager of a car dealership in Minneapolis. And part of the reason for that is he played collegiate football, and he just has that drive, and he has that commitment to doing the best he can. And he's competitive as all get out. And now he's the general sales manager of a huge Ford dealership in Minneapolis. So.
Yeah, that comes from playing in a great team sport.
Right.
You know, and then some days are better than others, especially when your coach is, riding you.
So, Colin's a referee as well. Colin Waite, does his thing with you guys?
Yes, I had the opportunity. His first varsity game ever was in Salmonwell High School, and I was on that game with him.
Great.
So that was in small town football. That's something else too.
Yeah, it's big time. Yeah.
So,
and Colin's one of our friends from the University of Arizona who runs Camp Cooper and making good things happen. And of course, my brother Bill and I, we have Coaches for Charity, and we do the high school football kickoff classic each year. We're in our 15th year. Funny, very first game we did, very first kickoff classic we did, we called it the Jamboree. It was at Tucson High School. It was on a Thursday night. It started at 5, and we had two games back-to-back. There was a rain delay. Those kids on the second game didn't get done till almost midnight.
Yep.
And boy, we've never done that again. We've they nixed the idea of a back-to-back game like that. But we do. We're rarely involved in high school athletics and sports and doing bowl-a-thons and basketball camps and the MLK Classic and so forth, because we really believe that the high school sports and elementary and middle school sports is really important. And Sixto and I both have collegiate athletes in our family, and we believe that's also very important as well. So again, Josh, tell us how we can people can get in contact with you. Can they call you for more discussion? Maybe get a hold of you somehow and say, hey, I'd like some insurance, but I'd really like to talk to you about
My selling days are over, so I'm just an account manager. So I'm the guy that says no. I'm like an underwriter. So, but with that, yeah, if anyone has any questions, they can feel free to call me directly. My phone number is 520-599-1261. We also have our local chapter email, which is azfoatucson@gmail.com, and then that can point them in the direction. And then more importantly, talking to me, then I can make it where it's not.
I think, Rick and Josh, that it would be important. I know I'm just speaking for myself. If I was interested in becoming an official, I'd want to talk to somebody and kind of get a lowdown on it before you went to the meeting and just jumped in a quick way, and maybe you did too. But I think I would probably be a little reticent to just go to the first meeting and say, I'm going to be an official, here I am. So I'd want to talk to somebody so they could reach out to you and talk. I think
absolutely.
That would be good.
Yep.
And it doesn't necessarily need to be you. It can be a son or a grandson or a daughter or anybody that's interested in sports and wants to be involved.
Well, and that's important too, is it's not just, we're not just talking about young men. It's women are as just part of our sport. Officiating as any other, so that's all important.
Well, thank you again for giving that opportunity. And you were going to say something, Rick?
Oh yeah, I was going to say, last year was my nephew's first year. I actually talked him into coming out. And he's excited about the year starting. He's like, man, I can't wait to get back out there. He just loved every minute of it. But he'd known I was doing it for a long time. And when he got to be the right age and had some time, he was like, hey, how do I get into that?
So, it's great to talk about, high school and the show, going to the college ranks and so forth and being in the big time. One of the fun things you get to do, too, is do the little kids in the Tucson youth football. And those guys are fun to referee. They're having a blast at that age,
Yeah, most of the time.
Yeah.
So except the August game's a little hot out there.
But
we all get
there.
Through it together.
Yeah.
So, and it builds character and then be an excellent community member.
Well, thank you both, Rick McGee and Josh Waite, for coming from the Arizona Football Officials Association. If you'd like to find out some more information to yourself or know someone that would like to be a referee, they could use the help. And they said they need some younger people because their knees are giving out on them here. So.
Not just the knees, everything.
Everything. Well, thank you so much.
Thank you, Dr. Ed.
Okay. Thanks for listening to Jump in Tucson, the Wonder Edition on KVOI 1030 AM, The Voice. Happy Monday to you, and we'll see you on Friday with Business Success Stories.